We are Montez Press, and we have been here on food office hours all day. That was an interview with Tom LaPrade and the founder of Printed Matter. And who was the other guest, Tom?
And Max and Scuda, or sorry, Scuda and Sharon Helgeson of DAP.
Great. So that was a little bit of a taste of the art book publishing world from a greater perspective, but thank you. We are signing off our takeover, and now we'll be the guests of food. But thank you for listening.
Hi, this is Dong. I haven't been here all day. Hey, thank you guys for running our show for us. It was actually really surprisingly entertaining to listen to a radio show that we weren't a part of. It was awesome from the office. Hope you guys had fun.
Yeah, definitely. It was great to be able to replay some stuff and be doing radio, but kind of from a different perspective of just coming in and playing some stuff
it's
and talking.
Very nostalgic experience.
It's true.
When was the last time you guys, was it at the Art Book Fair, the last time you guys did radio?
Yeah, and you guys were on.
Yeah.
You were actually our first guest in the RV.
Really? Uh-huh. Yeah. It was fun. That was awesome, actually.
I know,
really
we were going to play some of that, but then we ran out of time. So surprising how much how long radio, like how much content you can play on the radio. Yeah.
We keep struggling to find stuff, so we'll have to like steal some of your content.
Yeah, content exchange.
And then this summer was the first time you guys did it overall, right?
Yep.
How long did you run it for?
A month. Yeah, July 19th to August 19th.
And was it hard, to actually program for the entire month? Or were you actually batting away different types of programs?
It took us like 3 months, right?
To build
from inception, right?
Yeah. Well, we had the idea of running 24 hours a day. So it went good, but we had to do all the, we weren't like physically live 24 hours a day, but we had programming. So 12 hours we were live, and then 12 hours were spent going through archives and creating like playlists of content. So that was fairly.
Partnering with other art radio, like K-Chung and stuff.
Yeah.
Had any of you guys done any sort of radio before that?
Nope.
Not me.
Not professionally, no.
Nope.
I mean, I've done stuff with audio, but definitely not radio.
I mean, because we're only a week old, or a little over a week old, and we get asked this. We've been asked a bunch, why radio? Like, why do this project? Obviously not coming from radio background, so I guess same question to you guys. Why to start that in the first place?
Well, I think the first time you and I met and talked about it, we like got some drinks, and a lot of what we talked about was kind of the community that you can build around radio. And I think the past couple of residencies, by the way, the radio when we did it was part of a residency. In the past couple of residencies, it was important to us that it was sort of like a community building exercise. Mm-hmm. As a press, we work very internationally. So when we do these summers in a gallery space, the space itself and kind of the geography around it is really important. Mm-hmm. So it's always like very New York City centric. That was kind of one of the many reasons that led us to radio, thinking about how radio is a medium bound to a place, or at least historically it isn't anymore.
And I mean, in terms of the space thing, because that was something also we were like, we want to make sure there's a place where people can come hang out. And we were taking cues not only from you guys, but also obviously like East Village Radio and kind of the predecessors. But somehow intuitively, the physicality of a radio station is not something you really think about. How did you guys go about finding or creating the space you guys are in? What was important about that, that you decided that was the spot to open Montez Press Radio at?
Well, I mean, when we had the opportunity every summer to occupy Matthew NYC, so I think we sort of had this space already, and that kind of then led to, okay, well, we have a physical space that we're going to exist in, and particularly, I think, thinking of the context of a gallery space, which has certain connotations, and part of the residency for us is always how do we question or change the usage, and being a publisher, that also kind of doesn't exist in a space, but taking over a space. So then with the radio, I think it became really, we want it to be an open place for people to come and feel comfortable and be able to listen and hear the process of radio. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that that space already was a location that people were open to the public was helpful in terms of like people kind of wandering in, but just kind of trying. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, it was funny.
How do we activate it?
I didn't start thinking about it this way until I had to like list the project on like art cards and like these sort of like online, you know, what do you call them? Whatever, these places where you can like find what shows are happening in New York City. But there wasn't an option for like radio show open to the public.
Listening.
The other closest option was performance. And then I could say performance open like 24/7 for this month, space open from this time, whatever. And then I was like, oh wait, so we're performing radio in some way.
Which was also having the ambient mics, which you guys also have here, of again activating, and as people are listening, knowing that there are physically people here in the space. This isn't a pre-recorded thing. It does exist in a very specific.
Usually radio is very clinical, right? Mm-hmm. And that you don't, everybody wants the tight mixes and no talking and we're on air right now.
Like kind of clicking from like
exactly.
Piece to piece.
So I think Anna's idea and everybody's idea of showcasing that and seeing the process of that was really, I didn't get it at first, but I finally got it.
it's somewhere between traditional radio and just recording this space where people are welcome to come and share art and ideas or whatever, somewhere between those two.
Did you, one question I guess at first was, so it was on a second, it's on the second floor on Canal, for those of you who don't know Math Galleries, but it's in a very now popular part of sort of like South Lower East Side. Did you find a lot of people wandering and not knowing that there was Montage Press Radio going on there, or people mostly found it and then would come and find it in physical, in real space?
Well, I think because we were in a storefront, there were most people that came in, almost everyone that came in because they found it somewhere online or someone told them about it or someone who was going like brought them along, which isn't as nice as what happened today. You've had a couple of people wander in here. That was pretty awesome. Yeah, this elderly Chinese woman who didn't speak much English came in and she was like,
"She was not that old."
Okay, all right.
Excuse older me. Than you, Tommy.
Older than me, wiser than I am, sure. But she came in like asking for the like cooking workshop.
Oh yeah.
And Bella had gone out to get coffee, and I was like,
what?
No cooking workshop today. But there's a taco workshop on Friday.
The same woman.
It was the same woman. Yeah, Bella saw her on the way out.
She came for the pickling thing.
Yeah, she was here for the pickling thing.
Yeah, she was amazing. She just wandered in and just start like took her coat off very carefully, hung her bag up very carefully. Pulled up at a chopping station.
That's
and I was like
in
the mix.
So yeah,
cool.
She was great.
Yeah.
And she was sort of dressed perfectly because she was like more artsy than you'd expect the middle-aged Chinese woman around her to be, and totally looked like she was part of the crowd. It was amazing.
Cool.
And then took her pickled jar and said thank you and walked away.
Yeah, it's definitely a benefit to having a storefront.
Yeah, I think that was something that we were conscious of being in Matthew, maybe three. We had moved to the location, moved across the street, but still being on the second floor, and maybe partially of where we've always made an effort of reaching out to other organizations and inviting them to basically either suggest artists or participate by putting on events or other things that then they're kind of bringing their whole group of their network of people and their community into the space. And one thing with the radio that was nice is you would have these like very, we didn't purposefully like curate like the transitions. Also just scheduling that would have been like even more difficult than it already was. But I think it would kind of ended up being a very nice way that you would have different types of groups of people that are in this physical place, but maybe don't know of one another.
Like you've got that mixes
crossing over from one event to another.
We tried to like build in serendipity in a lot of ways, like in the way that we invited people to invite others. Mm. So, you know, we invited organizations to invite artists, so we didn't necessarily know what artists we were going to get. You know, we programmed out a lot to begin with, but then as it went on, we just like meet people because they were there, you know, with a friend or something. Mm. And then they'd tell us about their project, and we were like, sure. That's awesome. You're like, you're on next Thursday.
Yeah.
So you're still building. I mean, you were flexible to build that kind of mm-hmm. guest list or group of people coming by as you met them.
Yeah, exactly. That's awesome. And there are a number of ways we tried to build in that sort of like opportunity for chance and mm-hmm. serendipity. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like our version of like an open mic night or something.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Community radio style.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of that, I think Tommy was saying, I mean, one of the points was to kind of build and foster that community of kind of getting to the logistics or mechanics of what you guys did. Did you find any specific type of event or even event in particular that was, let's say, the most successful in that regard? I mean, in terms of bringing a lot of community together or even just simply bringing people out?
I think there were a lot of things that were successful to many different communities. I mean, we had like so many different, you know, like there were times we'd have like these like dirty like noise bros in, and then like then right after that it would be some like, you know, like soft spoken poets or something. Honestly, so it was kind of
and then
awesome.
They'd all meet and like fall.
Yeah, and it was kind of awesome to like have that. And like I remember we had like Disband, which was this like really cool, tough 70s noise feminist punk band. But now that they kind of look like sweet old ladies, but they're not, you know, like they're so not. And so while they were in there waiting to go on, we had these like really like gnarly, like hard techno DJs playing and they're like sitting on the couch, sipping their white wine, just kind of like bobbing their heads. Like what is this? Amazing. All right.
Any idea if any of the guests ended up working on anything together afterwards? Like did that, do you know of like that come to fruition yet? I mean, it's pretty early, I guess, but.
I wonder. You ended up like editing some stuff for Jay, didn't you?
Yeah, Jay Blue Monument. I think they're gonna release their audio, their show.
Oh, that's right.
On tape of some sort, maybe on Primitive Languages. So I'm not sure. Don't take that. That's not an official announcement, but through mixing and mastering it, and just cutting up audio and making it presentable for them, so that these artists or people who were on the station can distribute and like make themselves known or distribute their material in a way where it's presentable. So that was probably personally my personal connection to the radio and meeting somebody and working and collaborating with that.
I mean, there have definitely been a lot of, we were just like exposed to so much, and you know, we've since then like invited people to come back and do stuff, and they've exposed to others.
Yeah, I think the Good Room and my friend John Cook or James Cook, he got a night at Good Room on a Wednesday night.
Cool.
There
that's
just
amazing.
Through that, I think, or made Sweet. It more solid. So that was another connection. So there, I'm sure there's a lot that's being in the works right now.
Did you guys, I mean, you'd mentioned the tape, for example, but coming from obviously as a art book publisher, you put out physical things. Did you guys deliberately put out anything, any physical stuff as part of the radio program for that month?
Yes, we did. We had a lot of printed matter that we created.
On a RZA.
On a RZAgraph. So
amazing. That you'd in the space?
The RZAgraph wasn't in the space, but our first residency that we did on the first year was around a RZAgraph, and we asked 8 artists to come and live in the gallery and produce something on the RZAgraph during their week there. And so we have a RZAgraph that we use for various things. I printed a lot of stuff on the RZAgraph that was there, like a schedule, and then also just like promotional material. We did some kind of traditional flyering. Stacy went around on all the trains and put all of our flyers up.
We did, yeah. It's a great way to meet chicks. You should try it.
Did you tuck them like into the ads?
Did, yeah. They fit perfectly. We also released Ulysses. We waited to release Ulysses until that was the first thing that we did on the radio, which was sort of
the second
had
year.
Been derived from the second year of Montezet Matthew. So that wasn't material that was necessarily created like for the radio, but was strategically released with the radio.
Yeah, and we do have part of our thing with the residency is that we produce some kind of printed material from that. The first year was a poster. The second year is a how many page hardcover book with a insert in it. So it really varies in terms of what kind of publication. And we're not really sure with this what that will mean in terms of publishing, because I think the radio actually brought up a lot of interesting questions around publishing. Mm. What does it mean to publish something? And does digital publishing or does radio, is it published when it becomes radio, or where does that exist?
And you guys were also doing it live, right?
Yes.
Were you archiving and do you plan on, are those archives accessible right now, or are you putting out a podcast?
They're not accessible right now, and I'll veer on the side of saying we will not be putting out a podcast anytime soon. However, we did make sure that all of the shows went back to the people who, so we recorded them all and then gave links to everyone.
That's nice.
You should have gotten a link. Did you get a link? You should have a link. If not, we'll make sure have a link.
Not sure.
Okay. That's fair. But anyways, the link is there.
Okay.
Awesome. So that at least for people, like, they have it and they have the freedom to put that on their own site or to do something with it wherever they would like to. But that's kind of something too with the with the residency. Is that content is very, and the interjection, a fair number of things that we do are not like proprietary. Mm. It's not like we're like, we have the copyright on this and we're, it's more like, okay, we have this sharing of content, but I think that we do want to make that content available for people to listen to in the future. And that's something that we're currently working on, how to put that out there so people can publicly share in the, and what we gather.
I think part of our hesitation is we don't want to sort of kill the magic of radio, which to me has a lot to do with the fact that you don't get to control what you're listening to. It's just sort of on, and you have to be there for it, and then, you know, it's just like disappears into the ether. So we're trying to figure out a way to put it back out to in a way that it retains that sort of... Yeah, that sort of magic.
That kind of radio, maybe a little essence of the jukebox mixed in with the radio to create a certain freedom in the controls, but not having things like just click and download.
Right.
Because I'm not sure. That's kind of a different thing. But we've also we worked with Library Stack, which is like an archival digital archiving platform, and they archive all kinds of things on online and are kind of tapped into WorldCat. So if you were to go into WorldCat inside of an institution, anyone who has gone to school, at least in the U.S., knows that, or I spent a lot of time in graduate school on WorldCat, that you can search for audio files that way, but that it isn't necessary. It's more of like a scholarly archive. So we're thinking about a lot of different options of ways for that content to be preserved and accessible, because a lot of the radio is about access, and that was partially doing a pirate radio station was important in the sense that we wanted to, even if it was in some ways more symbolic than, I mean, it was working in kind of the area that we were in, but it wasn't hugely far-reaching, but still kind of echoing that the radio waves themselves are, you can just tune into them. So,
with both radio, especially live radio, or I guess that's just radio, and like physical books, how am I going to ask this? Like, neither of them are necessarily the means to reach the most amount of people in terms of, like, nowadays anyway, which I find very interesting. Like, there's certainly something very compelling. We've only touched a little bit on the radio side for ourselves, but something compelling about the intimacy of both, in a sense. And basically, I guess the question was, like, was there a correlation with how you approached why publish physical books and why do something that's so fleeting like live radio in an internet age or in a social media age? it seems like as a delivery of content, neither of those are necessarily the most efficient in possibly a very good way. But I would love to hear your guys' take on those.
Tom, I feel like, Tom, you speak really well about this connection, but I think the answer to that is yes. That was definitely something that we thought a lot about, the connection between these two seemingly sort of bygone or archaic or kind of out of fashion modes of communication that yet lead to something maybe renewed or productive that's maybe lacking in other aspects. Or, you know, people were always like, oh, now with digital books and, you know, printed matter is going to disappear
and I think cloud.
Yeah, and I think what you see is that it maybe functions differently. Like, it's no longer the place of all knowledge. Like, it's but like particular types of knowledge, maybe, or particular types of experience, and how we explore that. But Tom, what?
I think both like publishing and radio are maybe attempts to isolate information from like the like oversaturated white noise of like scrolling, mm-hmm. you know, either on your phone or on the computer. Like, the way you experience that information is like maybe sometimes too much. The way you analyze that information, you know, like it, like the speed at which you do that is different. So isolating it and from like that mess, I think, yeah, makes for more intimacy. It makes for a different way to appreciate it.
But I also think that something that's unique about Montes Press Radio is that it's not only a platform for publishing either like audio or text. It also functioned as an event space and a place to bring people together, much like here. I mean, that's actually arguably one of the primary purposes of what you're doing. And I think that's been one of the aims of Montes at Matthew for the last 3 years, was how can we utilize this space to bring together people from our, you know, dispersed communities, especially as an international publisher. But you know, whether that's bringing together artists and writers, bringing together people who are in maybe opposition with their viewpoints, but finding a way, I think, for some of the like actual human contact is one of the, and Montes, I think, like outside of Montes at Matthew, I think that some of the events that Montes does are really special and devoted to fostering a sense of like community and
I think it's also important to say like who that community is, and I think like one thing that that distinguishes that community is it's a group of people who all like appreciate art in a certain way that isn't just like it's art writers. It's not like necessarily like fluff like BuzzFeed writers, you know. So like sure, a lot of art writers actually write for BuzzFeed too, but you know, the point is it's like our community is like a place to like take your time with some good art.
I mean, I think that issue about community and also the issue of isolation, I thought that word was really good for it, is because I was realizing like we wanted to do a radio, but it has nothing to do with nostalgia in the same way that you might get back into LPs, for example, but it wasn't the kind of old school feel of radio by any means, but there was something immediate, like the immediacy of, especially when it's live, was really weirdly appealing. And only until listening to you guys, I was like, I think it is exactly that otherwise there's so much information as a way to isolate it, and also as a way to kind of be in the moment of the thing you're doing. It sounds really weird, but I've noticed that I listen a lot better when I'm talking to someone on the radio than I do in person. Like in person, I'm like, oh, cool. I'm like distracted by stuff. Yeah. But on the radio, it helps to have the headphones. It helps to be sitting 3 feet away from people. But you're very focused. Mm-hmm. Part of that is knowing that everything you're saying is sort of being heard, well, even by a person maybe. And so you have to focus on what you're doing. But I think it's the same thing with the book, that when you get into it, you're not checking your phone. And same thing with going to a live event or a live thing, that you're there occupied by the things happening in the room or the people in the room, not the other information in the ether that might be floating around, again, through your phone, let's say. But there was never, it was never, I feel like there's clearly a thread that you guys plugged into with all those things. But it was interesting, at least for us, it was, at least for me, it was never apparent until just hearing you guys now. That was one of the appeals, I think, of doing the radio part. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Really the personal, almost like the, it's weird to think that you're, like, more in the moment doing something that's, like, streaming and then disappearing immediately. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's somewhere between.
It's not passive.
Yes.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's like between, like, publishing, where there's a lot of editing. Like, we've taken 2 years on a book. And then, like, a conversation at a bar where you just, like, whatever, blurt it out, and then you forget about it. Mm-hmm. It's somewhere between those two things. Mm-hmm.
And I also realize it's like the, even listening to the radio, like you said, it's like, it's nice to be able to tune in and you don't know what's going to come up. It's not as scheduled. I mean, it's not as scheduled as a program of being able to rewind and listen to the same thing again. I think it's also something nice knowing that the information you're hearing or participating in is not something you can refresh your page and read it again or save it and bookmark it for later. In the same way that I feel like when somehow I don't retain the information of traveling from point A to point B anymore because the map is always there. Versus mm-hmm. in radio, you actually sort of pay attention to what's being said because you know it's gone the second you hear it, hypothetically.
Yeah, I mean, what you said, like, that you, the intrigue with something that's live, we experienced, like, some of the feedback that we got, and according to our analytics, like, things that were live were more
engaged
with and more engaging. And I think that maybe that has something to do with, like, authenticity, and that goes back to this editing thing. It's like, if you're live, and not only is there a lot of room for the unexpected, but people, I don't know, there were conversations that, like, I had this one conversation with this financial dominatrix named Carmenifa X during a radio show that I was doing, this, like, film screening and hotline thing.
Does financial dominatrix means she dominates finance people or that she dominates finances?
Probably both, okay. But their finances. We ended up we watched a film together, and then we had a conversation about, like, labor, and then it went into a conversation about race play. And it was this really, like, pretty charged conversation, and we didn't necessarily see eye to eye on it, but I think that for me, like, not only was it special because someone was, like, down to talk honestly mm-hmm. about this thing that people, I think, have a difficult time talking about, but there was that, like, intention within the conversation, and it felt charged, but also, like, the pressure of making sure that you're careful with your words because you are being listened to potentially. And I don't know, I just think things like that conversation, I don't think that's not a conversation that could have happened it could have, but I don't, to have that conversation edited over the course of like months or something, it would just totally lose its quality.
Maybe that would become like an over self-consciousness or kind of. And again, that kind of also the freedom in a way, which is why I also kind of have some questions around, like, archiving and how you archive this material, because it isn't a podcast. It isn't something that was pre-recorded, constructed, edited. And so then to sort of have that content be able to be downloaded and sort of saved and listened to and rewinded and played and listened to and rewinded, kind of like what Stacey, like, that conversation was charged, and while I think it was a really great conversation, it's like, I don't know if people were to listen to that in a non-live sense, like, how that would change the meaning of the conversation. Yeah. Where when you're listening to something live, I think you understand that the conversation is organic
and evolving, and
you sort of feel the tension of the room, and you're there with the people and experiencing that live. Yeah. So I just thought of that right now, actually, but I think that's part of maybe a question I have about how you go about putting that out.
There is so much really compelling, interesting, useful information, stuff that's said during these interviews. And a big part of me is like, because obviously not everybody gets to listen to the guests at any given time. So I mean, it's just something that we're, like, at the moment, I feel like we will release each interview anyway, but, I'd never again until this conversation thought about actually, but certainly the context of listening to it and the fact that it's not live will inevitably change a little bit how you hear it. Especially the ability to be like, oops, pause, I gotta go do something else, come back.
Right.
Or pause, rewind 15 seconds or whatever it is.
Doesn't
have that quite that magic, I guess, that was brought up earlier.
Yeah. You know, to back up a little bit back to your sort of point on like intimacy and like why we feel that so much, I was just thinking about the other sort of medium that exists in the art world to talk about art is like the lecture or the panel discussion, you know, which is it, you know, like under the auspices of like a gallery space, like it has its own like pretensions and like etiquette that I feel like you don't have on the radio so much. Like you're able to, sure you can have heady conversations, heated conversations, but there's something nice about how casual you can also make it on the radio. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you're kind of in front
of always open to discussion whenever it's on the radio. There's always like that one invisible person that's listening that can always chime in if they wanted to in some way or form, you know, and you know you're speaking to somebody in a sense.
I think it's also, at least for me, it makes such a huge deal that you're not seeing the audience.
Yeah.
It's which makes it A, very easy to forget about the audience, and also B, I don't feel like you feel like it doesn't feel like you're performing in any way when you're on the radio. Yeah. And even if you're not, as soon as you're on that stage or as soon as you're behind a table with 50 or 100 people in front of you, whatever it is, there's a bit of a performance going on. And I and a part of that, and I forgot who was talking about it, but with the financial dominatrix, was the ability, I think, for radio to have people get much more vulnerable and not worry about it, not checking everything they say and making sure it's basically marketable in some version or another. And that's been really eye-opening for me. And I realized very early on that, because you know, we bring on people that are doing something kind of incredible, so inevitably when we talk about what they're doing, people snap into, oh, I'm doing this incredible thing at this incredible gallery and working with these amazing people. And it's true, but it's also a little bit of self-selling. Mm-hmm. And then once you get past that, there's no more kind of presentation going on. It's just talking as a person, which I feel very rarely happens on a panel. And I don't know of many other settings that are for an audience that are not affected weirdly by the audience, except for radio in some way.
Yeah, it's like anything could kind of happen in a sense. You're opening your door to your vulnerability to be experienced by others, and they could have a say in it or participate or not. And it's almost, it's voyeuristic almost.
Yeah, right? I was going to say it kind of allows the listener to be that fly on the wall, but at the same time, you know that there is a fly on the wall. So again, like it's this weird space between like a totally private conversation and then one in which, you're publicly performing and you know that, you know, so many people are listening and it was interesting when we were at the New York Art Book Fair, we had the RV. And then we also had a day Printed Matter generously offered a space for us inside, and that was the whole reason we were there, but we kind of took that into our own vision. But it was because that was in the theater space, and so even though we were on the radio, I think it really changed.
You had there was an audience listening to you on the radio, on the radio?
Yeah, there was an audience, and even when there wasn't, because there were some times where there wasn't, but the mere fact of being in this auditorium setting versus being in the RV or being here or being in these kind of, like, I was saying, like, it made me really feel like the radio is a type of installation in the sense that, like, you're like creating an entire like environment, and there it really felt like we were like performing radio simply just because of like
pretend radio.
The way the stage was like, you know, had all these chairs in front of us, and we were kind of like the lights, you know, and you're kind of like, oh, hi. It does change how you're able to communicate.
Was there a noticeable change in how the conversations went with who you were talking to? Like, were they more guarded? Were they...
Totally, yeah. They were way more guarded when people were on stage. Even if there was no one in the audience. Like, you know, like, just, like, having all these, like, seats facing you and having all these, like, hot lights on you, like, people, like, froze up. And yeah, that's strange.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... I guess part of it is for anybody that's... that wants to talk about their interests. It's very broad. But let's say, let anybody wants to talk about art and is curious if radio was like a medium that they should explore, or whether they should stick to like Instagram posts, or whether they should stick to like a personal journal, whatever it is. Can we just go through like the technical things that you guys needed to do to set up Montez Press Radio? I think it's especially helpful knowing that you guys hadn't done it before.
Also, what Montez Press Radio did is not necessarily what needs to be done to have a radio station. Is that true?
I think you could say that we, I think because we wanted to create in a public space, and sort of did kind of think of radio as an installation in the gallery. I think especially using a gallery space. But I mean, really, you need to use. It's called BUT. It is. It is. I don't. What does it stand for?
It is nonstop hilarious.
I know. It's always like check the butt
using this tool.
The butt cut out.
Wait, what does it actually stand for?
Broadcast using this tool. but yeah, that's like the one streaming software is called Butt.
And it's an open source. It's open source, so anybody can download it. And
you need the most important cord, which is a RCA and auxiliary cord.
Yes, to eighth inch.
The eighth inch.
Yeah,
that's auxiliary. Just the most important cord, that no matter is. What sound person or you're yes. doing audio wise. That's the most important cord.
And a microphone and some headphones and
a voice.
A sound. And then streaming. I mean, Tom, you did the. Setting up like the stream. I mean, we have our own website. Like you, I think, but you can also. There are sites that will host.
Like Waveform.
Yeah, but also I think more like public. I don't know if you have to pay for that, but I'm just wondering how you then get it out onto the public facing. But you have to get a domain.
But you don't necessarily need the domain if you're doing pirate style.
No, but pirate style. I think actually one thing that I learned was it's easy in theory, kind of like. Yes, you get an antenna and you get a little box and you set it up and you put it outside. But to actually tune your antenna and to get like a really reliable signal,
especially in New York,
it takes a certain amount of practice and skill. That's something that I would like to. There's actually a place at Stanford that runs workshops and week-long programs on how to run pirate radio. And I think they go into how to even build your own transistor and kind of. But I think there are some nuances that makes that a little more tricky than it first seems. But you can just. I mean, trial by error. I mean, put some tinfoil on it, and you'll get a signal out there. So the technology isn't. I mean, that's kind of what's beautiful about radio, is the technology hasn't changed that much, other than with digital.
With the butt.
We have the butt, but you know, plug that in.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. We interviewed this guy, DJ Syntronix. That was. The interview was before the Printed Matter interview. I don't know if we got to it in what we played, but he was talking about this guy, X was his name. He was like this pirate radio guy that sort of taught him everything he knew. At some point he said, yeah, he could make a radio out of anything. He could make a radio out of a frying pan. So like there is this like world of like just like total enthusiasts that like to rig up ham radios, as they call it, like out of anything, and like they get really obsessed with like different kinds of antennas and all this. So like you can get into that world, just like find their forums and message boards. But what's also awesome is like the entry is like next to nothing. Like all you need is like a computer, or all you need is like this little like box that you can buy it. There's like a place in Williamsburg where you can like get this little like transmitter box. You can buy them off Amazon for like $50. Phone? I wonder.
I mean, I'm sure.
Wait, yeah, I wonder if there's like a radio app.
I'm sure. I mean, if there isn't, there is one now.
Yeah, so. Right.
Yeah. Someone who's listening and was like, "Ding, got my idea."
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty lo-fi. It's you know, transistor radios are, you know, if all communication went down, then
right,
radio is the number one way. FM radio, yeah, that's the first way of communicating, and
that's how we got like Hurricane Sandy information.
Yeah,
when all the power went down.
AM wave.
Yeah. Could you tell how many people were listening on the pirate?
No. Pirate. I don't know how you... Nice. Yeah, I'm not sure how you would figure that out.
Nielsen ratings. Get the,
yeah, maybe. Something like that.
The Nielsen of pirate radio.
But I know there were some people definitely who tuned in. I think Labor downstairs tuned in a few times.
That's cool. That's funny.
Yeah.
And then in the space itself, I know you ran it 24 hours for a month, but you didn't have someone in the space for all 24 hours for a month, did you?
No. Tom spent the night a few times.
Did you?
But he lives
somebody
close
did
by.
Spend the night in the RV.
Yeah, when we did night. It in the RV, we had someone sleep in the RV every night. Right.
Yeah, Tom pointed out the sleeping bunk.
Yeah, for just it's a lot of equipment, yeah, so yeah. We wanted to make sure that there was someone there. But we didn't, but we tried to have someone monitoring the radio at all times, periodically, or turning it on. I mean, it does become like you feel like the radio is like your child that's sleeping in the other room, and you're like listening in to make sure. And there were a few times, I mean, we did happen to run the radio the entire thing during Mercury retrograde, which was just because... I don't know, I'm a glutton for like making things difficult, taking risks. I don't know. So we had a couple freak kind of like where all of a sudden there was one day it just stopped working.
Really?
The computer just decided to restart itself. I'm not sure what happened, but luckily Tom was close. He lives close by, so it worked out.
Definitely gets you out of your comfort zone.
It does.
What, knowing that it's just kind of running?
Yeah, it's like problem solving right on the... You know, you
gotta
be on air and whatnot.
I mean, I think definitely running the live events and doing music and doing panel discussions and various different types of... We had analog people coming in and setting up their music equipment and doing that. And we had a workout, Rich Psycho workout 5x5 every Wednesday that was in the space. So those kind of things presented... interesting challenges.
We were each allotted one breakdown.
Yes. Did you all use it? Anybody cash in yet?
I think we all. You had a quiet. You quietly
yeah,
broke
you
down.
Had like, yeah, you had the silent breakdown.
That's your style.
Yeah.
where did Tom go?
He's gonna explode any second.
Yeah, you still got. Yeah, we still got.
No, I'm kidding.
We have a few. You got 15 minutes.
Oh, my God. I'm exploding. Yeah. On air explosion.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
New segment.
We had a few of those.
Really honest about what I think about all of you.
And how many, sorry, just keep focusing on the logistics. How many people from Montez Press were in the space at any given time?
Anywhere from 1 to 5. We also had another person who worked with us over the summer, Greta. I always say her last name wrong.
Lichtig.
I feel like that's...
And then Angela, who helped us set up.
Yeah, and then we had a sound person. But we made sure, like, if there were live events, so we always had 2 people. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, 2 people. But, for instance, if it was just 1 person coming in and doing an interview that we weren't involved in really at all, they were interviewing someone else, then we would have... 1 person. That was usually earlier on in the day, but then just to have 2 or 3 people when we were doing live events, I think 3 people and changeovers, obviously those are the most difficult. Ideally having at least 3 people there was kind of the minimum, just to make sure that 1 person was hosting people. I think that was one thing too that was really important to us. Like, number one is that like everyone who's on the radio or in the space is having a good time and feeling safe, and then someone on the board making sure that the mixer is sounding right, and then someone else float doing whatever else needs to happen.
Because I was very impressed when we did the RV show, that it seemed like people just kind of clicked into what they needed to do or what they were there to do. I was like, oh, this is so professional. It's amazing.
I've not been called that before.
You played the part really well.
Relish in it, Tom.
Yeah. So we've talked about the radio side of Montez Press for a while, but I wanted to make sure just to also ask. And again, it's sort of framed in for anybody interested, young or old, with, let's say, getting into publishing, let alone specifically art book publishing. So you probably, I feel like you might have talked about it when you were first introducing yourself this morning, but how long has Montez Press been around?
Since 2012.
Okay.
So that's 6 years.
And it was started in the city?
No, it was started in Hamburg in Germany. And again, it was started as a self-publishing mechanism for the artists that were involved in that. Because, for instance, this book here, Sessions, is Christiana Blattman and Van Hoosain Clark, who are two of the founders, and they wanted, my brother does performance, Van's my brother, and wanted to create this Skype play, but then it was a question of, okay, so we're going to do this Skype play between A Nervous Breakdown and the towers that are in Mexico City. I can't remember.
Torre de Satellite?
Yeah, Torre de Satellite, thank you. Basically, that they wanted to have a conversation between that. And so, who was going to publish that? And so was there a way that we could create a platform to self-publish? And then that kind of grew into...
Is the Hamburg branch, Hamburg headquarters, still active?
It is. So that's where our graphic designer...
Got it.
Max Prediger and Julian Matter are, and also Anya Deitman, who does File Magazine, is based there. So we're actually going to have our meeting. We try to meet once or twice a year, everyone involved in the press, and I think we're going to have it there this year.
No, that's cool.
So, yeah.
Was the Hamburg side actively involved in the radio side out of Matthew Gallery?
Max does, he was super involved in the graphic design and putting the website together and doing all of that. So he was very hands-on. And then we definitely reached out to everyone. So I asked Anya to record the file event that was happening over the summer to participate. And I think really it was important when we had the opportunity to go to Printed Matter and the New York Art Book Fair to engage that part of the press. So we have people in London, we have people in Hamburg, we have people in Brussels, and how do we get them to come? And also Emily Pope, who's in London and does the calendar interjections, she came over for the radio for a bit. So it's challenging, but we wanted to make sure that we kept. But one of the cool things about radio is that while people weren't necessarily here, people could send content. So we had a lot of Anya and Nana, like a lot of people from there sent us content and context to them play, and then also we're listening. So I think that's one of the beautiful things about radio too, is it's really intimate, but it also has the capacity to cross many continents and oceans. Things like that.
You had mentioned that your brother, one of the founders, or they had a piece of art they basically wanted to publish, and so started Montez's way to publish their own art. Is that still the case, that artists are the ones kind of pushing and running Montez?
Yeah, so we all have our own individual art practices. That's kind of an important element to it. Although I get wrapped into more, I do less of that and more of Montez, but it comes and goes. But I think everyone continues to strive to have their own practice. And I think that helps to inform how we create work and how we find people that end up participating in Montez.
Yeah, I think calling it an artist-run publisher makes for different incentives, makes for different, I don't know, a different way of approaching the content. That was important to us throughout the radio program too. We looked at a lot of other sort of self-publishers. One in particular that I really enjoyed talking to was Telus, this audio cassette magazine. And, you know, a big part of the conversation there was, like, in the early 70s, all this, like, experimental art just, like, didn't have a place. Like, you couldn't put it on the radio. You couldn't really put it anywhere. Like, who was going to listen to sound art? So they so had a great conversation with her about, like, what self-publishing meant at a time like that. That conversation came up again when we talked to pirate radio people who were involved in immigrant communities that didn't have a place to put it out. So that sort of, like, spirit of self-publishing, I think, runs through.
From a financial point of view, because and I said this again because in the context of I think people wanting to do something that's important to them, and oftentimes having no idea how to pay for it, is it a hard balance with publishing the kind of things you want to publish versus finding ways to make money? Because I apologize if it's not the case, but I assume art book publishing is not a giant moneymaker.
No, it is not. You are correct. Ding, 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 ding. No, but art book publishing is not. And I think if you look at a lot of art book publishers, not to speak, but they either get a lot of money from governmental institutions or grants, or are privately funded through patrons or private money, and that supplements and offsets the costs of what it actually takes to become an art book publisher. So I would.
I think what's a little bit different about Montez Press than the way it usually works in the art book publishing world is usually it's like a gallery will have like a publisher kind of associated with them, or they'll be a big part in publishing what comes out. So most catalogs that you see, that's like a gallery. That's like a gallery's propaganda machine for their artist.
Or institutions have their own publishing branches, which then again, they have public money or public funding to do that.
Mm-hmm. Although I think that the term art book is somewhat broad because, I don't know, like we do all of these New York art book fairs and, you know, LA art book fair, fucking wherever the fuck art book fair. And I think a lot of the publishers that are there call themselves, or I guess they're, I don't know, it's not necessarily like a galleries thing. It could just be like a couple of people who run and operate, you know, when you think of 8-Ball, like that is the opposite of kind of what you're talking about. But I don't know. So I don't know how, I think that the term art book is something that has just means like not a trade publication at this point. Although I think that Montez Press, when we maybe talk about art book publisher, it's like the publishing of artists in particular, not necessarily just books by writers.
Sure.
In particular, art writing, I think, is something that we're interested in. And also, I would say one thing that we don't do is catalogs. Particularly maybe in the sense, like I feel like we have a very open platform, but I think that there are a lot of catalogs out there that do have a lot of funding from galleries and other things. So it is important.
It's clear what the intention there. It's fluff with a lot of catalogs.
Yeah, but you know, we're also just wanting to have a way of disseminating your images or your content to people who weren't at your show. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's also, I don't think that catalogs are completely invalid. I just, that for us, that wasn't like the place that we're trying to create a platform. But I think it's a hard balance to try to figure out how to create that, you know, and maybe in some ways we feel like we found something in radio, not that we're gonna stop publishing books, but that helps to create a type of platform that we're looking to create, but isn't as maybe cost prohibitive as book publishing can be. I mean, you can also publish books not, you know, there are ways of publishing books inexpensively, but I think it's a balancing of what kind of risks you're trying to take and what kind of audience you're trying to meet. Yeah. So
I mean, almost. It's almost only expensive relative to, like blogs, you know, like publishing for a while was like like pamphlets and stuff, like in the Reformation or whatever, like it was like the way to put it out. Like I think what makes it feel so prohibitive now or like inaccessible now is just because we have something that's so much more accessible mm-hmm. and like free mm-hmm. in most cases with blogs.
Were you also there from when it was founded?
I was there as like a participant. Okay. I wasn't like in Hamburg at the time, but because of my relationship with my brother, I was like involved in the inception of it, at least on like a periphery. And then, but I was there for the first event that we ever did, which was at a place in Milan during MeArt, where Hugh read his novel and I read a piece of my writing, and we launched the first issue of Salt that we put out. So okay. I feel like I was pretty close.
Well, I was curious because one of the questions we ask all the guests usually actually comes at the end, but yeah. I think timing-wise it actually may come at the end anyway. Oh, we're pretty good. Is how you made your first dollar, which I've never asked a collective or really like, I guess a company of sorts, the question. But do you like, was it from the sale of the first book, or was it sponsorship from an event? Was it, do you remember where that, like the first time basically Montez Press went from an idea to conceivably a business? And I don't mean obviously like a,
yeah, I think it was probably, I don't know if I know it's the exact dollar, but I'll say, and I said this a little bit earlier, that Chubbs, the publication that we put out by Hugh Lemmy, that was like the first publication that moved, that sold, that ended up, got reviewed by Vice, it got reviewed by Rhizome, I think that was really like, we've sold three editions of that book. And I think that was really the moment when we put that book out and published it, that we started to, we were like, wow, people are really responding to this. We all of a sudden have an audience where I think before that we didn't have, we were putting things out as self-published. Again, Hugh is not a part of, he was the first person that took kind of a risk and worked with us to produce that novel. And that led us to think, oh, wow, this is actually something. Mm-hmm. This isn't just an idea or a project.
How long was it? When did Chubbs first get published?
Let me see. I think it was 2014. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
I'm like looking around. I'm like, because we did three editions. Is this, wait, let me feel this one. Right? Yeah, I think this is actually the first edition, so I can look at it. We still have a few of these around. Did they do it? Things have changed. Oh, 2004. I mean, 2014. I was okay. Right. I'm like, just don't want to misspeak. But yeah.
So this was, I mean, this was 2 years after Montez started. And I apologize if you already covered this earlier, but why do you think this one started moving, let's say, versus the ones you had tried before? Or not tried, but other publications you put up before?
I think because Hugh himself, the author, had a pretty extensive network outside of the visual art world. So I think inside of the visual art world, even if you're self-publishing performance texts or pieces of, it was harder for that to get traction, where this, Hugh already had like a kind of reputation and a writing practice that he was working under, which I think then gave Montez Press an audience. So we always feel very grateful to Hugh in that sense, and that, you know, we provided him a place to write his first novel, but he also kind of gave us a bit of a platform to stand on. So that kind of like collaboration.
I feel like he was also writing about some, like his work was really timely and related to like culture. The content of that novel is like related to things that were going on and are still going on, but things that were in the news. Like, I don't know. I just think that it was in dialogue with or in conversation with things that were being talked about as well. So coming from but the perspective within Chubbs, I think, is divergent, and therefore, like, I don't know, maybe it offered a perspective that, like, maybe I don't know, a place like Vice could access some of these, like, political questions, but from a different and maybe more, like, youthful and interesting perspective for their audience. I don't know.
Yeah, or talking to, like, a broader public mm-hmm. rather than sort of, like, an insular, maybe, like, harder to access mm-hmm. Content.
So maybe related to that, I mean, as a writer, it seems like you guys obviously enjoy doing the radio side of Montez. I assume you'll keep doing it, or have you guys not talked? Do you plan? Are you like, yep, this is, we'll see if we do it again?
I mean, I think we really didn't know when we set out to do it what would happen, which I like. I'm always pushing people to, like, have an experiment and see what happens. And I think it both personally for myself, and I think everyone at Montez has found it, like, deeply rewarding. And so, and then also the feedback that we've gotten has been extremely positive, and that leads us to, on both sides, want to find a way to continue to do that in some form. That what that form will be, I think, is still something that we're trying to figure out, the where and the when. Mm. But yeah, stay tuned. As what we keep saying, that this won't be the last that you hear of Montez Press Radio.
And if it is, then. Good job, food.
Yeah, put us out of business. No. I think that's what's also, like, that idea of, like, to me, like, radio is something that is expansive, and so it doesn't, like, the more people you can involve or kind of get into it, the better. Like, I think it kind of works well that way. It doesn't need to be, like, I don't know. So. I don't know what the word for it is, but someone else can say something. What do you guys think? Do you guys want to keep doing radio?
Duh.
I'm into radio.
Stacey?
Hell yeah.
So that's
we'll take that as a hell yeah.
Yeah, that's what we have.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for running the show today from here. I think I'm very happy that we got to meet you guys, because I don't think, like, Bella put us in touch with you guys, and I don't know how we would have done it without meeting you guys, but also seeing how you guys did it, I was like, oh shit, that's the way to do it.
Cool.
Which is literally the only, I think also the only radio station I'd seen in person at the point. I was like, perfect. That's a great model.
Yeah, but I think that. Yeah. No, we're happy.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah
we thank you.
It was so much.
Really great to be able to come back on and spend the day here. And yeah, people come down, check it out. It's super cool down here.